Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, I'ma win, it's a turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russin Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pie.
In Dynasty Outhouse, I have a trading problem.
And I'm Zach Reed, and I have a trading problem.
I'm Brian Hartman. I've got a trading problem.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to session 326 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will. And we will. There is stuff happening. There is so much going on. But before we get going, I'm going to say, it has been a little bit, Brian, so why don't you remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do.
Well, as I said, I am Brian Hartman. You can find me, all over the place. I like to dabble a little everywhere. I am at @too_much_Brian on Twitter. For the most part, on YouTube, I am on the Fantasy Football Advice Network. I've got a couple shows there, Too Much Best Ball, Too Much Fantasy Football. See how we've got the names rolling. It's easy to find me. And you know what? Fantasy football cannot consume all of our life, or at least that's what my wife says. So on the off chance you're looking for something on the other side, I've got Too Much Movie Night as well, where me, my wife, my buddy, and my dad dig into those movies to see which ones hold up, which ones aren't so good. It's been a lot of movies, a lot of bad ones lately, guys.
What movies that you were surprised did not hold up?
Oh, man, a lot more of the childhood favorites. Rush Hour was one of my favorite movies growing up, so going back and watching it, it's a little bad. And a lot of the 80s movies, the ones I didn't see that I don't have nostalgia for, are you can't apologize for them if you haven't seen them, you know?
Yeah, humor was very low-hanging fruit in the 80s and 90s.
Like Us.
Yeah, especially with race, oh man. But like... I watch comfort TV before I go to bed, and I just finished Parks and Rec, which is brilliant and perfect in every way. I mean, it's not perfect, but you know. But then I just started 30 Rock. Love 30 Rock. 30 Rock might be some of the best written half-hour comedy ever. Oh, man, some of it is a little problematic. and especially with Tracy Morgan being Tracy Morgan... which that's the point of him. Like, they even joke about it from the very beginning. But even at times, it's just like, all right, man. Like the situations they put him in to sit, like, it's just like,
Yeah.
But also, like, you make a fantastic point where, like, it was a long time ago. How long have I been married? 07. Oh, man, 17 years. So, like, right. About 17 to 20 years ago, I showed my younger cousin Ghostbusters for the first time. He was probably in his lower 20s, and he thought it was boring. And I sit and I think about it, and that's a lie. I will say first, I rampaged. What the hell is wrong with you? You're wrong. You're crazy. But then I stopped and I realized, like, people, if like you look at a lot of the comedies that came out pretty much ever since... like improv TV came a thing. Everything became less and less scripted. Like,
yeah.
Pretty much, you know, Will Ferrell and all that stuff. You have to work less and less for comedy. It's really just spoken word, ridiculousness. And you don't need to be patient. It is stupid line after stupid line after stupid line. Don't get me wrong. It works. It absolutely does. But when you're raised on that, sometimes I could absolutely understand that it's hard because, I mean, while Ghostbusters is hilarious, it's not 100% a comedy.
Like, yeah. think that's the big difference we've noticed is like pre-2000, physical humor was so much more involved in these comedy. You got to think of like, you know, Jim Carrey, like a lot of those guys that you had there early on, Chevy Chase, you know, these guys were just so physical with their humor. Nowadays, it's all about the writing. It's all about the delivery. Like you said, it's one liner after one liner. So they're just throwing shit at the wall, just seeing what sticks. And some of it's good. I'm not going to lie, but I feel like it's been a rut the last 15-ish years because we've gotten some good comedies, but not consistent comedies. Like I remember coming out when I was a kid.
Yeah. And it's funny, like we were talking about, not talking about when we were setting up SFB this year with the theme being movies, which we'll get into in a second. I was trying to come up with, you know, divisions, and me being me who, I mean, I was born in the early 80s. So most of my media knowledge is late 80s to early 2000s or aughts or whatever you want to call it. And then after that, I hit the point of old where everything just feels like it's the same. So I'm like, all right, no, I need to try and make some things that the kids would be excited for, you know, for divisions. And then I started looking and I'm like, there is almost nothing anymore that is original.
No, it's so oversaturated. Yeah.
We're absolutely at a point where there's not a lot of original ideas left. And let's face it, so many of the things we like are just copies of other things, just with the skin change. Like, the biggest example, which again shows my age, is like the Flintstones just being the Honeymooners, you know, and everything is just a skin of something else. But still, it was original enough that it was like a standalone. But like, again, we were talking about Ghostbusters. They're still making Ghostbusters movie. Why? Because the idea of that franchise is just so much better than anything people can come up with these days. And then Herm's in here saying, I've heard the Zoomers love nothing more than Pauly Shore movies. I love Pauly Shore movies.
Dude, In the Army Now is one of my favorite movies as a kid. Had it on VHS. My dad recorded it on, like, you know, back in the day when we'd steal them from TV like that. And yeah, it was on repeat for me all the time.
Yeah, Biodome is probably, and of course Encino Man. Like, and I'm just gonna sit here listing all of his movies. But no, let's move on a little bit. Because we do have a lot of news, though. We have two trades, and we have a decent amount of listener questions. So real quick, actually no, Brian, shut up. Zach, you did Boston Live Draft. How was it?
I did. It was incredible. It was not only the Boston Live Draft, but the SFB Gala. Yep. To end the Scott Fish Bowl season, the draft, it was fantastic. It was at the Westin Copley. We had a ballroom. We had food. Bob, Gilchrist, Scott Fish, Ryan McDowell were all there. It was fantastic. Stefania Bell showed up at the tail end because the FSGA is in town, and it was. Awesome. I'm not sure I did very well, but that's secondary to all of that other stuff. Yeah.
No, that's not important. Yeah, I'm so sad that I wasn't able to make it out to Boston, but with like the weekend and a half before of going to New York and Philly and all of that stuff, there's only so much my marriage would permit. but oh well. So what about you, Brian? I'm 99% sure you got into SFB this year, so hopefully you did. Otherwise, I feel like an ass. Asking the question of what division were you in? Where did you draft from? And how do you think you did?
Well, I got in one of those waves actually right before the Pod-a-thon. So I signed up for the Pod-a-thon where I actually got my first invite last year, which was, you know, a blast. So I was kind of hoping. I was like, well, maybe the magic strikes again. And sure enough, it was like the day before I got in. I'm in the Rush Hour division, Lieutenant Carter. And I picked from the 8th spot. I thought it was right where I could get Richardson, but still be kind of greedy and still play back closer to the end of the draft. And like I said, he went right before me. I ended up taking Bijan, heavy running back there. I went double running back right off the bat. The scoring with this was bonkers. I could not find any familiarity in the drafts that had already happened. So I was like, screw it. Nobody else is going this route, heavy running back. Everybody else had their strategy. So, double tapped Bijan and Gibbs, and might have taken a kicker a little earlier than I should have and missed out on the third quarterback that I needed, but overall I think I'm good.
You don't need three quarterbacks in this league. Yeah. How early did you take your kicker?
I don't want to say.
Say it.
12.
No, that's
That's not bad. Yeah. So
nobody flinched. Nobody freaking flinched.
Did you happen to hear the episode of the
JJ Zachary podcast?
Yeah, where Scott went on with JJ and talked about the value of having the. That's what I rode. My team was abysmal in the first half of the year last year in Scott Fishbowl, and people dropped kickers during bye weeks, and so I picked up four kickers and just started. Like, because I'm on MFL and we have the, and so
I'm at sleeper, which sucks. Yeah, I wish I could start too.
Yeah. So I just started throwing kickers in and ended up making the playoffs. And
that's dope.
Like, I think it's such an advantage, especially if your back end of that starting requirement is light. You know, if you're not getting the, you have to take upside shots in Scott Fishbowl. And if they don't hit, you've got to do something to create that floor.
And that's kind of what I thought. I was going to be waiting on my big run. So I was going to be waiting for a bit. And I was kind of hoping, a couple guys would fall back to me. So I was like, all right, let me see if I can trigger this kicker run. A few guys pick them up. Literally nobody freaking flinched. It was like five more rounds before somebody took a kicker. So I'm this guy that went double running back, unlike anybody else, and then took the early kicker. But I'm like, I got Justin Tucker. The Baltimore has a rough early schedule. And it's kind of automatic. It's Justin Tucker anyway. But set it and forget it now for me. And he finished as a top 50 player last year in Scott Fish scoring. So come on.
Well, and I think that's part of the thing that it's easy to get caught up in feeling stupid and not wanting to feel stupid in the Scott Fish Bowl because there's so many eyes on it. And so my division has five people who have finished in the finals before. It's ridiculous. We petitioned where it's the Will Hunting division.
Okay.
Because it's in Boston, but we petitioned to change it to the Black Mass because I think that's probably more fitting. But you have to kind of throw that little voice in the back of your head out and do stuff that you wouldn't normally do because A, the scoring is completely different than anything that we play, and B, it's a 4,000 person tournament, so you've got to do something different in order to win. Nobody remembers if you lose.
All right,
I remember when I lose. No, but I will say, and to go along the lines of what Zach just said, and then we'll move on because even now the drafts are over anyway. But I loved getting the middle of the draft kickers, like around like through 11 through like maybe 17, like maybe five, six rounds. I got my three kickers for the past 3 years. I've drafted three kickers because I play on MFL. And the reason is for everything Zach just said, because in those rounds are like the steady guys. Like they're the guys that you want on your redraft team, not the guys with the ceiling, not the guys that you want in a tournament. Like, so I'm good letting other people draft these third string running backs or second string running backs because we're not that far down the list yet, and third wide receivers on teams where it's like, let me grab my kickers now, so when they're grabbing their kickers, I'll grab some rookie wide receivers. I'll grab, I got Brian Thomas Jr., I got Roman Wilson, I got all of these guys a little later while everyone else was worrying about their QB3, which I don't have, or starting with their kickers because I already had mine, so, and these are the guys I was waiting for anyway.
Yeah.
So do not for a second feel bad about round 12, Justin Tucker, because you're talking to round 11, Justin Tucker. All right, so let's get on to the news, because I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of it. First one, Jordan Love won't practice until he has a new contract, which they're apparently close on. The GM is the one who said this, so it leads people to believe this should be done soon. I mean, I'm just going to lump this next one in because it's the same situation with another team, sort of. CeeDee Lamb and the team have worked on a new contract but have not been able to come to terms. Now, he'll officially be a holdout, collecting fines with hopes of reaching a new deal at some point. Brian, are you a worrier when it comes to these things? Are you just like, nah, they're going to play because they're players? Like, do you actually think these people are willing to hold out?
Over the last few years, ever since the new CBA came through, you really don't see the holdout as often. I mean, you do through the preseason and all that. So for that point, I don't think he's going to miss games. What scares me, though, is we do often see these guys holding out through the preseason And then when they get to the regular season, they're not warmed up. Their bodies aren't, you know, regulated to that. So injuries or just efficiencies down. So for that, I am aware, I guess, of the situation because he is going as the top wide receiver. Tyreek Hill's usually the number two right behind him, at least best ball anyway. Like he's been very popular as synonymous with that top two pick. So for that, I am, like I said, just aware. I don't want to overreact, but I want to make sure that I remember what's happened in the past.
Zach?
I got a question. Is Jordan Love being fined as well? I mean, it sounds like two, like, interesting differences in situation.
It makes it, because, again, these are almost seem like they're planting timetables.
Right.
Where, again, like, this is, by the way, thank you, Frank, for the news. Because he's saying the GM is even saying this, which means he doesn't think he'll be holding out for that long.
Right.
On the other hand, this is coming from the media where CeeDee Lamb's saying he's going to hold out.
Yeah.
You know, so like it seems like they're trying to paint a different picture of the situation. And so, yeah, Love will absolutely get fined, but it also seems a lot less serious the way it's being painted. Yeah.
I did see Jerry Jones just cleared up that whole paternity issue thing. So maybe that's what he was waiting on. Let me see how much I'm going to have to shell out for this, and then I'll have the money to be able to commit to CD and Dak, because I don't know why they're dragging their feet.
With that. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's not something that I'm really worried about. Quick, you mentioned Frank. There are some people in the background of fantasy football. Frank in the chat is one. Like Bob Gilchrist, I mentioned with the Scott Fishbowl. Like there are some people who don't get enough credit that kind of make all of this go around, even though you don't know. You don't know.
I tried to get Frank, because Frank like recently changed himself to Frank in the chat. I told him he should change it to Frank the producer, and he's not willing to take that step yet, even though he pretty much is. Yeah, like again, like this isn't anything I'm making any moves on. Like I sent out a trade for Jordan Love this morning. It got rejected, and I sent and then it got countered. I rejected that. And then right before we started, I sent a counter back. Like, I'm not avoiding Jordan Love. I'm not trying to even get him cheaper than he normally would be. Like, I don't think this affects anything. You know, of course, and again, it's completely painted by the media. But yeah, the holding out and willing to collect fines is scary. It is. But like, how many times has someone missed games? Like so rarely. But yes, you also then have to get into, you're going to end up with a soft tissue injury if you just come in and start playing full without, you know, the warm up getting there. But again, not enough to change anything. Next, Sam Darnold and Jacoby Brissett will take the majority of first team reps when camp opens for their respective teams. Are either of you surprised by this?
Not in the slightest for me. Like, I think McCarthy is further away than people think. And the same with Drake May. Like, Drake May, what he can do with his legs and moving the pocket is great, but he's got to learn when to do that and when to not. And he's not at that point. And one and a half of those guys, I'm not sure about Darnold, but at least Brissett is a serviceable quarterback, and he's got the advantage of the Patriots don't actually expect to win anything, and so he can be fine, give May some room to grow. Wouldn't be surprising to see May play after the bye week. You know, I think it's like week 11, so I think they've got a ways to go, but I'd have to check myself on that. I made that up.
No, I'll believe you no matter what you say. What are you, Brian? Do you think any less of McCarthy or May? Are you interested in having Darnold or Brissett on your teams? Anything, any feelings about these?
I mean, I get if you need them, like as super flex guys, I think you can get, you know, Brissett and Darnold for cheap. But I think they've got like about a 4-ish week lifespan on them. You know, we might get a little bit more, but I wouldn't be comfortable than like expecting about 4-ish weeks from these guys. the coach up there in the Vikings, you know, he's been there for several years, so he's got to pretend like they're going to be competitive a little bit. So I think, you know, testing Darnold out there first, because you can't start with McCarthy and then come in with Sam Darnold. You know, you got to start with the old guy. And then, you know, up there with Drake May and the Patriots, Gerard Mayo is a first-year head coach, so we're going to expect a building process. So I don't think there's any pressure for them to win. So let May sit back there for however many weeks. Brissett's, you know, familiar with the franchise. They understand, you know, they drafted the guy. So I think both situations, it just, like, narratively, it kind of lines up with the way I thought they'd approach the season.
Yeah, weirdly, like, the Vikings have seemed very happy ever since they signed Sam Darnold. Well, about Sam Darnold. Like, so it kind of seemed like he was starting, even though they drafted McCarthy high and all of that stuff. It always felt like I don't want it to happen. Though, is Minnesota's line good? I don't know these things, because it doesn't matter nearly as much as it, you know, I'm not a real football Minnesota fan, so it doesn't.
They just signed Darisaw. I saw a little bit ago their tackle, but I think they're like middle of the pack.
Yeah,
like, so, like, if their line is decent, then yeah, sure, let McCarthy play. If their line is bad, then you keep Darnold out there. But, like, which Darnold are we getting? Are we getting, like, willing to throw at Darnold, or are we getting seeing ghosts Darnold? Which is why I'm a little worried, because if we're getting willing to throw at Darnold, that'll be great for the receivers. But. Yeah. And it's really funny. Like, I was thinking the exact same thing you guys said about Drake May, but from a very different vantage point. It's like, why put him out there right now? It will not be good for him to be out on such a bad team. Mm-hmm. Let him sit for this season, get three games at the end of the year just to get some real snaps under his belt. But other than that, why put him out there with maybe wide receivers and all of this stuff? There's no reason to do it. Next, Brandon Ayuk is reportedly showing up to camp despite the trade request, and Ricky Pearsall will begin camp on the PUP list. Niners core should look very similar to last year, at least to start. I like that Ayuk is showing up. I don't think it means anything. It just, again, it's one less thing to worry about. And we knew Pearsall was going to start on the PUP, but also we're still at the point where you can get taken off the PUP the next day anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Any strong feelings about Ayuk or Pearsall, either of you?
Not a fan of soft tissue guys, but it's first injury. We'll see.
What about do you think Ayuk hangs on the Niners, or you think he's going somewhere else?
I think we have him this year. Like, he's contractually, like, obligated to be there through next year. So I think in the offseason is the smartest chance to move him. But the Niners are in a win-now window. So why would you go to the Super Bowl with the first-round pick instead of Brandon Ayuk?
Well, I mean, yeah. Like, maybe, like, I know it doesn't happen very often, but, like, in-season player-for-player trade, like, when one of the Niners linebackers eventually get hurt because their linebackers love to get hurt, you trade Ayuk for linebacker and something else, but yeah, that's way too speculative anyway. Hopkinson, were you going to say something? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, it's been today or yesterday, the Patriots the rumor mill is on fire up here in New England, because Gerard Mayo said that he'd like to burn some cash and you know, make a play for a receiver. So that's been all of the talk on sports radio. And if you were Frank is in the chat now, but if anybody else was yelling at me, the Patriots bye week is week 14, not week 11.
So. Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Good. Give him the bye week to study up and get him out there 15, 16, 17, 18. Just Patriots, if you're going to burn money, just stay away from my guy. I don't want that.
It could happen. That's been a rumor too.
Don't like, if more than anything, I just don't like their jerseys. Red, white, and blue jerseys just are boring to me. Forever, red, white, and blue is just a boring jersey.
I'll tell you what, though, Russ, if he ends up on the Patriots, you and I will be going to, like, a Pats-Jets game where we can get cheap tickets.
Yep. Jets tickets are so – it's so funny to have two teams playing in the same stadium and one of them be three times the amount of the other. And that's not an exaggeration. Hockenson is apparently well ahead of schedule, which I love to see, per Kevin McConnell, but will begin camp on the PUP list. Again, PUP list meaning nothing, but also not surprising because we assume he's going to miss like half the season. But I loved hearing he's ahead of schedule. Mike Williams, now on the Jets, for those who forgot, not cool, Frank, will start on the PUP. That's just not surprising. I will forever love Mike Williams, hashtag Team Clem's a big wide receiver, but my dreams of stardom are gone for him. This one. Javonte Williams and Salami P. Ryan. A Oh, what a good autocorrect. Javonte Williams and Samaje Perine are reportedly competing for one roster spot. I thought Javonte Williams did pretty well coming off of a major knee injury last year. Like, at least I wasn't expecting him to return to form last season. Like, I was waiting for this year. So this is sad, if true. And
I saw
Javonte has to win that spot, right, over Samaje Perine.
I saw something yesterday. It was Benjamin Albright put out something kind of correcting that. That was a false report coming out.
Okay, good.
But I feel like I heard something about it closer back to, like, the draft or in May time that there was a possibility that he could get cut, which I thought was so bizarre. You know, he's on his last season, another year removed for the ACL. Like, you got him on the roster. What? I don't know. It's very bizarre.
Yeah. I have not always been a Javonte believer, mostly because I was a Michael Carter fan. And at the time with them being in the same draft, I felt like if you liked one, you had to hate the other one. Mm-hmm. So I put on my, I hate Javonte Williams hat, but then he got far too expensive when he was getting into the league because of, it was a really weird time where all you had to do was be young and you were like a top five running back in Dynasty. But like his price started to go down a little and I'm like, yes, let's go. Oh, you hurt yourself and now you're out for like a year and a half. Never mind. But I hope he does well. I hope everyone does well. So that doesn't really matter.
Except Tom Brady.
So, okay. 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 Joe Burrow fully cleared for contact. That's amazing. I'm here for it. Let's go. Ready to roll for the season with a brand new haircut. So I see a picture. Of course, Frank sends me a picture. And I just see that and I'm like, oh no, I have to go adjust my rankings. You have this beautiful wavy mane that just is so baller looking where you could take the helmet off and you throw your hands back, pushing your hair, and he has the, it's straight enough that it goes back. It doesn't turn into a poodle like mine does or like Zach's does.
Yeah, yeah.
And he buzzes it down and bleaches it because apparently it's 2001. Like, why, Joe? Why?
Look, if you had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything.
Don't do it, Black.
Oh, sorry.
You did it, yeah, Zach.
Mom spaghetti, you know?
His palms better not be sweaty. You got to hold on to that ball. Don't, no fumbles, Joe. Oh my God, that hurt my soul seeing that picture. I was not ready for it. I don't like it. Joe, why'd you do, like, this is very personal to me. I don't know why you did it. But Joe Burrow's awesome. It's fine. Go get Joe Burrow. Danielle Popper of The Athletic says the Chargers will start McConkie, Palmer, DJ Chark in three wide receiver sets. No Quentin Johnston. Is it time to be done with the former first-round pick? Never. We're not actually going to answer that question because Frank actually added a listener question, which we'll get to in the listener questions, but it has to do something with that. But it just makes me sad because I liked Quentin Johnston. But also, no, because he has a place. They just haven't found it yet. Last one. Houston signs Cam Akers. Didn't know he was a free agent. Seems like depth more than anything. Yeah, I think we're past the point of Cam Akers being scary to anybody, right?
He's definitely not scary to Joe Mixon, which means he's not scary to anybody.
Yeah.
Does this say more about Damian Pierce, if anything?
It's a body more than anything. Like, Damian Pierce, they never seem thrilled with, even when he was doing pretty well for them. Like, they pretty easily brought in Singletary and just said, go.
It's Cam Akers. Like, he doesn't have an Achilles anymore. He lost them both. And, like, that's who they brought in.
So what you're saying is he doesn't have a bad Achilles.
Yeah, I don't think he can tear him anymore. He's good. Yeah,
they're gone. So it's fine.
Flop around.
Just got that. Oh, how am I supposed to go on? All right, but that is the end of the, if you want to call it news. We only have two Trade Addicts trades, and we have a bunch of listener questions, so we're going to do the trades first, even though I normally do give it out to the guests to choose. So Trade Addicts leagues are 12-team Superflex, PPR, tight end premium with 1.75 points per tight end reception and 0.05 points for return yardage, except for TA1, who is now, even in a time where return yardage are going to be a little bit more worthwhile, they're holding out just on principle at this point. So I still have to say that every single week. So the first trade we have is from Trade Addicts 9, which happened, I think, as we were actually starting the show. I got the email saying that there was a trade coming through. It is, and we've been talking about him, J.J. McCarthy and a 26th fourth for Will Levis, Keaton Mitchell, and Jelani Woods.
I just want to make a face at this trade.
I made a face at this trade. I got to be honest. I feel okay. So besides the fact that I feel like Keaton Mitchell is getting very forgotten about, like he wasn't great or anything that like year and a half ago before he hurt himself. At least it feels like it was that long ago. But I think it was the beginning. It was it last season or the season before?
Last season.
It was last season.
It was it like he was.
He was a rookie last season.
Was it? I can't remember. Like yeah. Time means nothing to me anymore. Like. He is very, very different from every other running back they ever have. Like, he's just that fast. He's not Derrick Henry. He's not J.K. Dobbins. He's not Gus Edwards. And he still is that. So, like, I don't think he's going to take work from Derrick Henry or anything, but I feel like he might have use or at least some value in Dynasty. That being said, this fourth Keaton Mitchell and Jelani Woods feel, like, pointless. And this is a McCarthy for Will Levis trade, which feels gross.
So like,
I don't think Mitchell, Woods, or the fourth add much to a trade of quarterbacks that are... I'm still calling McCarthy a starter because I think he will be by the end of the season.
For
like,
sure.
I don't feel like they add anything to the value of this trade.
I would rather have McCarthy in this trade. Simply because I think that it's going to take longer for him to prove that he's bad.
Because Levis has that year. Under
because him. I think Levis is going to prove that he is mediocre early this year. I think he's there and he's going to start. The Keaton Mitchell thing, like I understand your like the thought process behind the Keaton Mitchell. I am still singularly focused on Rasheena in that backfield, who's also a 4-4 guy. Like he's not slow, and I really liked a lot of his early career film. So to me, it's just a matter of like I'm gonna psychology this one and just say I would rather have McCarthy because I think you get a longer window on people buying into McCarthy. It would be to flip, and it's Trade Addict, so I know I can do that.
Yeah, I think if I'm the contender, I'm actually taking the Will Levis side. If I'm the rebuild, I'm going the J.J. McCarthy side. Just because Will Levis, he's going to get the starting job the whole season. They're pushing all the chips in to see if he's their guy, because otherwise they're going to draft him in 2025. So I'd feel comfortable about having him for more of the season than not, you know, just as far as starting in that super flex spot for you versus J.J. McCarthy. It could be a bit. Say Sam Darnold goes out there and does just enough. If they're winning games... he's not coming out, you know? So just for the startability, like I said, as a contender, I think you'll get enough out of Will Levis. And then you get a dice roll with Keaton Mitchell and Jelani Woods.
Yeah. So I honestly like the idea of going out and trading for Will Levis right now. And it's for the reason Brian said. They're pushing their chips in. They're bringing in pieces to put around him. And I like that. It's why I kind of like I'm into Bryce Young also. But the point of being in on acquiring them is for price. And that price is less than J.J. McCarthy to me.
For sure, because you spent, what, a 107 to a 111 on J.J. McCarthy? So you're saying that haul down to the bottom is worth a first-round pick? I'm not willing to spend a first-round pick on Will Levis, even if I'm guaranteed the 112. Or, you know, giving up the 112. I don't think I'm doing that.
Yeah, especially like, okay, so like this is getting a little too in the grain of something that didn't actually happen. But like if I'm in season and I have that team where I'm just like, I'm making the finals, I would trade and my quarterback got hurt or something. And if Will Levis is doing decently, yeah, I would trade my probably 112 for Will Levis at the time. But yeah, you're right. Like if Will Levis is a 2 seconds kind of guy, which maybe it's too late for that because there's enough people being like good pieces put around him. But I still don't think people like him enough. But It's so funny to think that a guy comes out his rookie year, has a game where he throws 4 touchdowns, and that was bad for him. Like people got excited and then he could never come close to doing that again because that's not who he was or was ready to be. Like if he just came out and only threw 2 touchdowns that game, I think we would be happier with how he played the rest of the season, which wasn't very good, but it wasn't bad. Like, I love that kid's moxie, you know, just to sound like an 80-year-old. Like, I love that he's willing to stand in the pocket and pretty much willing to take that hit to let the play mature a little bit, which shows, like, a little bit of intelligence and insanity. But... I'm not super thrilled on the talent in general, but it's the idea that the dude does in fact have a cannon and he knows it, which means he's willing just to throw the ball, which is kind of what we need for fantasy sometimes. Like, just get that. You need that season where the dude is willing just to throw it and it turns into a lot of touchdowns. Like, you need that luck of that one season of that person getting that high touchdown percentage. And I think Levis can do that.
What do you think you could get on top of somebody like Baker Mayfield or Russell Wilson for McCarthy? Like, again, like, now if we're, I'm galaxy braining this, but like, if I'm a contender, I still want McCarthy in this deal because I think I can, I think people are still overhyping him, and you could go, I mean, you might even be able to get Goff plus. I don't know. It depends on. I mean, I guess he's got a little hype because he just re-signed and it was big money. But
yeah,
like that is the type of move that I would want to make as a contender, is get McCarthy with the idea that that's not my last. I listened to this great show called Trade Addicts, and Russ Fisher is the host, and he's fantastic because he talks about cascading trades. And so that, like, that's immediately where my mind went with this. Like, I'm not done with either side of this if I make this trade.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it comes down to, is we're sitting here like, Will Levis, and then Brian hit the nail on the head. We're like, well, if I'm competing, I want the guy I know is starting, but then it turns into what Zach is saying. Rather just go try and Baker plus, if you can get Goff plus. Like, I would rather try for that, because if anything, it's stable. You know what it is. Will Levis could be. And so, like, that's not a competing thing. This just means that they liked Will Levis to the point of maybe disliking McCarthy. And I do happen to remember, now that I'm saying it, like, the dude who drafted McCarthy was hurting for quarterbacks at the time and is now no longer hurting for quarterbacks. So maybe he does believe in Mitchell, and I do love me some Jelani Woods. Just to put it out there. Like, again, it's not going to happen, but it's fun to think that it might. And they don't have a tight end, really, even though Kylan Granson is one of my favorite players ever because he did a photo shoot with the football as a baby after catching his first touchdown.
They do. They have a forest in that tight end room. Are you kidding? There's like six guys over 6'7". It is ridiculous. None of them are great, but it's, you know,
exactly. It's wonderful. It's fun. And Jelani was super athletic and gigantic, and it was just fun. It's like, you know, Darnell Washington for 30 seconds. Like, it's just fun to think about. Okay, so let's move on. TA10. Sam Laporta and Chris Olave Sam Laporta for Chris Olave and a 26th second. Again, keeping in mind 0.75 point per reception premium for tight ends. Brian, what do you think?
You said 0.75. I don't think I have an issue either way. I think I like both of them. I think it's kind of team dependent for me, as lame as that is. I don't know. I like both sides.
Well, it was me and Herms, and Herms is here saying, yeah, this trade rules. This was the fourth-ish iteration of this, and he sent it to me, and I ended up just accepting it. Zach, I'll let you talk before I start talking.
I wish you hadn't told me that it was you and Herms, because I was going to say that this is definitely two people who understand the value of tight ends in these specific leagues. Like, that the top tight ends are difference makers in this league. I still want Laporta in this one, even though I think it's a fair price. And Brian, I think, like, I'm with you. This is a great trade. But in TA leagues, especially with the tight end, I think there is a positional advantage to having the top tier tight end, and Laporta's so young that now all of a sudden, Laporta last year in TA leagues would be like a mid-tier quarterback one in scoring. And so that's how I end up playing these leagues. And I know it's not for everybody, but I don't necessarily need a QB2, even though it's a super flex league, because if I can go get tight ends, all of a sudden I'm making up for that. And if I can start two or three or four – then it's like I'm starting multiple quarterbacks in this league. And I like Olave, but man, Laporta's already that dude.
See, I'm not that I love the talent of Chris Olave, but he seems like a guy that we might be 3 years out before we finally cash in on his brilliance. I believe the Saints can get out from underneath Carr after this offseason, which would mean next year he has a rookie, which means it's going to be not till year two that we can really see that connection blossom. So yeah, Chris Olave might just be a very expensive wide receiver two. You know, like he's priced as a wide receiver one when really he's just going to produce as wide receiver two for the next couple of years. So overall, yeah, the Laporta, I do love that with Superflex. I had Ingram and Njoku in several of my Superflex leagues last year just because I had to start them both and my quarterbacks kept going down. It was bullshit. But yeah, Chris Olave, questionable for me as far as like ceiling.
Sam Laporta, player, total score player 23 overall.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, Chris Olave wasn't all that far behind. I think he was, I think it like 40-ish points on the year, which is what, 2 points a game? So. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to step on you.
Here's my thing. Well, first of all, you know, before, let me just, I'll read, Hermes is in the chat, so let me just read what he's saying. It was either Laporta or breaking up the Kyler, McBride, Marvin Harrison Jr. stack. Unfortunately, gut call. I didn't even realize he had Marvin. Like, I knew, like, see, my original, okay, he has one more. Fun, maybe context for listeners. I'm a notoriously critical person when it comes to Olave and his price. This was a big mental hurdle for me. Oh, good for, like, I'm glad I could help. That's awesome. So the thing is, well, first of all, I didn't even bother looking at Marvin. Like, I didn't notice he had Marvin Harrison Jr. because I traded for Olave, and I don't remember when, why, or how, but John Bosch is in this league, and Olave is, like, his favorite wide receiver. So I'm sitting here, like, I can get John Bosch to overpay for Olave, and he won't do it. And I'm like, I'm not even asking for a ridiculous overpay, just like, you know, you're a fan overpay. So I'm like, you know what? You're not going to trade him. You're not going to trade for him from me. I'm going to offer him to everybody. So I kind of did that. Olave offers to like 6 or 7 teams, you know, the teams that were in a place to pay for someone. And also what I was trying to do was kind of trade down a little bit and get a little bit of capital on top, whether it was another player to put in my lineup or a second, like something that I could use to turn into something else. And it got derailed when he first brought up the whole Kyler thing. And I'm like, all right, well, if you're not breaking up your stack, let me try and get the whole stack. and then we just went to where we went. And Laporte is good. He was my favorite tight end coming in last year. He did well better than I thought he was going to do. I love that he worked his way into the offense. And the insane Amon-Ra St. Brown playing the entire season after week 4 with his oblique not attached to his body, apparently. Which has nothing to do with what I'm saying, but that is insane. And I can't not say it out loud because that's just crazy. I think Olave has higher, this is going to sound weird, I think Olave has higher upside than Laporta does, because I do believe Olave has the ability to be a top tier wide receiver. Okay. A top of the second tier. This is the whole Joe Burrow thing again, when I accidentally said top tier instead of top of the second tier, because not elite. You know, he's not, maybe, like, I don't know what needs to happen for him to be Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra, who I put in there now, and Ja'Marr Chase. But, like, you brought it up. When Carr is gone, if they don't bring in a rookie and if they bring in someone who's willing just to chuck the ball, Olave could go nuts. And I'm here for it. Like, I believe he's capable of it, which is why I was a little asking for a lot when I was offering him out. And then when I saw Laporta come back, it really came down to either Laporta is going to be very good in my lineup, or especially once points start being scored, I'm going to be able to flip Laporta for a lot. And that's really what it came down to. I didn't feel great about this. I need to be honest, even though, like, you both said Laporta and the 0.75 premium does mean a lot. I don't know if it's my rose-colored glasses for Olave still holding strong, which, again, we'll get to that question in a little bit. I didn't love accepting this trade, but A, we had zero trades, and B, I like Herms, and I wanted to give him a deal, and I wasn't going to, if I'm not getting Kyler and McBride, I might as well just get Laporta. And Jason Real in here, who was part of the TA9 trade in here, taking the Olave side, just so we could even it out a little bit. All right, but that was the TA trades. Let's go on to the listener questions. First, at Bob Gilchrist FF, the aforementioned, I feel there isn't enough food takes from Zach with fantasy drafts approaching. I think we need the top 10 foods to be served at your fantasy football draft. So here's the thing. I'm going to cut this off because I made this mistake for a very long time with Zach. Zach is a man who loves food. The problem is he loves food and doesn't really feel the need to differentiate. So, Zach, what's your favorite food? Yes.
Yes.
Zach, would you eat this or that? Yes. So I'm curious, Zach, if you actually do have an answer of what your top 10 foods to be served at a fantasy football draft.
In fact, if you look at Twitter, I actually responded to Bob, yes. But this is an interesting question for me as somebody who loves food, but the fantasy draft is a tough place to actually dig in and eat. And like Bob killed it with the Boston Live. Like we had sliders. So we had a chicken slider, we had a steak slider, and then we had a regular burger. We had pizza. Like, those are great. You got to have something that is portable. You can eat quick. But generally, I don't eat very much when I'm doing a live draft. I bring my orange cream soda. I bring my cream horns. And that's where I'm at. It's something I can attack quickly between picks, but I still want to have my attention, my faculties directed toward drafting. Like, that's the thing. I brought some incredible chocolate chip cookies to the Boston Live Draft, so I didn't have to be distracted. I didn't have to get up. I didn't have to go through the food line, even though they had dessert there. Like, I want to be focused on my draft.
Go ahead, Brian. I see you very nodding very emphatically.
I just feel like he hit the nail on the head, just like blew it out of the water. That's now, don't get me wrong. I love football food. You know, Sundays do a lot of cooking. Super Bowl is my Thanksgiving. Like, I'd make Harrison Butker proud. I'm in there with my apron just cooking away on Super Bowl. But for the draft, no, I need my hands. I've usually got a computer, a notebook. I don't want grease stains on my damn keyboard. I'm a clean person. I don't like that. So if anything, get a bag of corn dogs, something on a stick, you know, not something that you're not having to a plate and a silverware. No. Something that you're going to get your fingers dirty. No. So if anything, dipping sauce, you know, like some queso, some jalapeno dip, buffalo chicken, you know, like that type of stuff, make it easy. But yeah, for me, it's training day. Like right now we're training for the draft. Snack time and draft time is draft time.
Now, I will do a nice brunch before the draft. 100%.
You got to fuel up.
And we've done that. We've kind of made that a tradition with the Boston Live. The past couple of years, we did Loretta's Last Resort. This year, we went out to the Friendly Toast. I had breakfast egg rolls. They were fantastic. Ooh. But like, when it's time to draft, it's time to draft.
Locked in.
Have one of my longer running keeper leagues was a live draft at my friend's house, and he went out, you know, all out. First of all, his basement, he turned into an Irish pub, and he would cook wings and he would cook empanadas, which is a very weird combination when you think about it, but he does a great job at both of them, and they're both delicious. So what I would do is, because I need to eat both of them because they're both wonderful, I would eat the wings first, because I don't need anything when I'm drafting Justin Jefferson. I don't need to think. I don't need paper when I'm drafting Bijan Robinson. Like, I don't need that. But when you start hitting that fourth, fifth rounder, I'm like, all right, I need to start crossing people out. I need to start paying attention. I switch to the empanadas, which, yeah, there's a little grease to them, but it does not enough for me to care. First of all, eat left-handed, right-handed.
I draft two-handed.
Oh, no. One hand. That's all you need. Especially when there's someone else doing the stickers, or especially when, like, I don't have a keyboard with me because, well, first of all, it's been a few years since that league is shut down. But also, like, this is a league where some of the guys still showed up with magazines, so I didn't really need to try my hardest. But Yeah, like that's really like everything you guys nails it on that, hits the head on the nail, hits the nail on the head. There you go. All right, I'm ready for bed. It really comes down to when it's draft time, it can't be messy. You need control. But like if we're just talking straight football, like you said, the words buffalo chicken dip, which is like a necessity almost. Absolutely. All right, we're gonna stop talking about food because then I won't be able to stop talking about food.
All right, I gotta get some ice cream after this.
Yeah. Okay, here's Frank's question. How do you decide when to finally quit on a player? At some point, we hold out hope too long and realize it's never going to work. When is that moment for you? Is it a time thing or a production thing? And then he says his favorite Olympic sport is speed climbing, because in the tweet I asked, which was also his idea, like I said, he's the freaking producer of the show. He just won't take the credit for it. He's, you know, put the question out there of what's your favorite summer Olympics sport? But we'll get to that second. So again, earlier in the news was talking about Quentin Johnston and is it time to give up on him? No. And it's really funny when he asked this question, I'm very glad we're having other people on this show because I'm the wrong person to answer this question. So I want you guys to go first and hopefully say smart things because I will not say something smart.
Wide receivers are notorious roster cloggers. And I hate to say that. I mean, the Quentin Johnston arc mirrors the N'Keal Harry arc so closely. And it's
that hurt my soul, but you're right.
It's not like you're not wrong to be hanging on to him, but I don't think you're allocating roster spots as efficiently as you should be. To me, this is if I can get a second or if I can add a third to get a second, you know, with Quentin Johnston, I'm going to do that because now I've gotten out of a second year player who has quite a climb. He's probably going to have to end up on another team, which is hard to do for wide receivers. He's going to have to be utilized in the right way. He's again, a very similar player to, and I think back to my write-up of Quentin Johnston, and I said the issue is we're all chasing that white whale of Calvin Johnson, that X receiver, the big go up and get it high point guy. And we chase that in a league that doesn't necessarily win that way anymore. You see, even the players that win at the catch point are players like T. Higgins, who wins on back shoulders. You know, he's great getting to the sideline and adjusting for that back shoulder throw. And that's not really what Quentin Johnston does. Quentin Johnston is not a great separator. He separates vertically, or if you can get him in space closer to the line of scrimmage, he's really good at creating yards after the catch, very similar to N'Keal Harry. And so to me, a player like this, the chances of them breaking out, and this is where I defer to somebody like Peter Howard, who runs the numbers, the chances of a player breaking out when they don't have any signal after year one is really minuscule. And so if I miss out on Quentin Johnston because I got rid of him too early, that's okay because I'm going to get rid of the next 10 guys just early enough. So I'd rather do that than... Now, if you're talking about acquiring Quentin Johnston for like a third or a fourth, like go ahead, have at it. But it's a matter of, for me, I want guys on the back end of my roster who have, you know, big upside, a lot of running backs. That's usually what I roster because you can have 1 week, you know, running back one upside with a guy who gets put into a lineup where you don't necessarily have that with Quentin Johnston, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. KJ Osborne has sat on my roster his entire career. Like, that's just – so, like, first 2 years, I'm not getting rid of these guys, even if there's those signs, for nothing. You know, I'm still going to at least hold on to them in the first two, maybe 3 years, depending on that production, but I'm not giving them away for nothing. But once they hit that 3, 4, 5, I'm okay with just shipping them off. Because, like you said, they clog rosters. I've only been doing Dynasty, I guess, 4-ish years now. And I've learned a lot of that because so many got wide receivers. I'm like, ooh, let me grab him. Let me grab him. Let me grab it. And some of them pop off. There are a handful of those stories. But you know what? If I got out from underneath Devontae Parker, I'm not sad because I missed out on that one season where he broke out in year five and we didn't see anything else. You know, yeah. Like, we're not going to see this consistent behavior. I'm going to get it because these guys, they're boomerangs. They bounce around the league and they always come right back to you for a cheaper price. So I'd much rather, like you said, take the investment in a quarterback and a running back, somebody who I'm going to flip for seconds and thirds or, you know, a starter, you know. So I just think that, yeah, I never realized until recently how much wide receivers just kill your roster. Or, you know, depth at that.
So since I just happened to grab a tweet from Peter, since 2003, there have been like 16 players who have broken out in a third year without breaking out in the first, without finishing top 36 in the first two. Mm-hmm. And like, you're talking like Hunter Renfro is in that, Eric Decker, Steve Johnson, Pierre Garçon, obviously Nico Collins in the past year, and you mentioned Devontae Adams. There are some guys, but like, think about how many players are in that player pool, and to only have like 16 is just, it's not a great bet.
So the reason I wanted other people on, because my answer is never. Never give up. I just dropped Andrew Luck like last year. Which I see their jersey hanging behind you, Brian. I'm holding out for that Jerick McKinnon seventh year breakout, that Devontae Parker and Corey Davis 6 year breakout. Like, and again, it's all about perspective. I'm not expecting a first round valuation for Quentin Johnston anymore. So, like, it's a give and take of what you think holding on too long is. Like
Curtis Samuel, look at him. He was viable last year. You know, he was viable the year before that. But if you've held on to him, did you love it? No, but if you still got him a piece of him, you know, there was something there.
Producing already. Like, that's why that one doesn't count, because like, he's producing and he's worthwhile on your roster. Assuming you start 10, 11 players and you're in like a 12-team league. Like, if you are in a 10-team start eight, you don't want Curtis Samuel, then he's clogging a little bit. But, you know, in a lot of cases in the leagues I play in, and since Zach's in a bunch of mine and they're all set the exact same, then those are leagues he plays in also. It's tough. I've gotten better at it. I will say that. Like, back in I will forever punish myself for my Josh Doctson and Corey Coleman love. Like, I know I held on to my valuation of them for far too long, expecting them to stay worth a first and stuff like that. And especially because back then, I say back then, like it was the 80s or something, you know, it was 7 years ago, 8 years ago, which is actually a long time ago now that I think about it. We were stuck on the third year breakout for wide receivers, which we don't wait for anymore. You know, if you don't have a good first year, people are worried. If you don't have a good second year, you're done. So it's a bit of a different world we live in. So, and I've gotten better about it, but the truth is, if I like a play, and I admit this everywhere, like I had many of my DLF articles start out by saying, look, my personal bias is strong in this article because I'm bad at giving up on players I like. I've gotten really good at liking players I used to not like. Like I'm better at admitting I'm wrong when I can profit from it, getting points for it. Like, all right, Hollywood Brown, your BMI doesn't matter. You're doing really well. I'm going to trade for you and score a lot of points because of it. Jaylen Waddle, I didn't like you enough. I'm going to go get you on a lot of teams, and I get a lot of points out of that. But the other way around, maybe it's the fear of selling for a second, and all of a sudden he balloons and becomes worth a first. I don't think that's what it is, because it's really just about the players more than anything else. But like, I don't know. I hold on for far too long, and I don't have a good answer for it.
Because it's so hard. I mean, it's anchoring bias. I like this player, and you're holding on to that. And like, that's perfectly normal. But every now and then you got a William Faulkner. You know, you've got to kill your darlings. It's the editing a piece of writing, and going back and like really figuring out what you need and what you don't need. And sometimes you got to do that with your dynasty roster, because if you're rostering players at the back end of your roster that you're really attached to, you're missing out on making those cuts and picking up a couple years ago, picking up James Robinson in the preseason. Like if you had N'Keal Harry in his third year, and you're still hanging on to the fact that you had him as a first round pick, and you're not able to cut him for James Robinson, who came in and had a top five running back season, man, you really missed out. And it's hard to do.
Yeah. Real quick, Herms is throwing some Peter Howard facts in here, so we're going to read them. Fun note about RBs. Among 227 rookie running backs who've seen 20 or fewer carries in their first season since 2013, only 11 have gone on to have at least one season as a flex level player, RB36 or better.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Sorry, I read that wrong. Felt like a good note to add to Peter's fact about the wide receiver. So that was Herm's work. Don't want to misplace that.
And I agree with you absolutely, Herms, that like your chances of having a player be good are less likely when they don't show you that they're good right away. The one caveat with running backs, at least the way I think of them, is if they start, I know I'm going to get points out of them. Whereas if a wide receiver starts, you don't necessarily know because of the way targets are allocated by earning them, as opposed to running backs where you've only got one guy in at the position at one time, unless you're Miami or San Francisco where you're running a fullback. But they're not touching the ball anyway. Like, I love Juszczyk, but he's only getting, you know, 20 carries a season. So it's a little bit different because I'm not thinking of them as a full season player, whereas like running backs, I'm trying to get like a week or two or three, as opposed to a receiver where you got to have a guy who is a starter and producing, because you never know when the players are going to blow up that aren't that, you know, it's so touchdown dependent, or, you know, they catch one long pass and great, you had a good week, but did you start him? Whereas running backs, all right, I know that the running back in front of him was injured. I know he's getting the start this week. Let's roll him out.
Yeah, and it always comes back to the difference between running backs and wide receivers is, I love your analogy of the elevator versus the escalator. Yeah. When it comes to, like, you know when a running back is going to be starting. You know when he's going to get the ball. Wide receivers, it's not as easy, you know. Even when the stud gets hurt, vacated targets aren't a thing. Like, I mean, since we're talking about Peter Howard, let's go. It's tough to, just because he's on a wide receiver gets on the field doesn't mean he's going to do anything with it. Rest in peace, David Bell. Another guy I'm sad about. But, you know, we're going to move on because this is getting me sad. Let's talk about our favorite Olympic summer sports. Frank said speed climbing, and I had no idea what he was talking about. At first, I started picture peopling. Peopling, nice. What time is it? I started picturing people on, like, mountainsides speed climbing, and I'm like, please just tell me they're harnessed, because that sounds terrifying. No. And then he showed me it's indoors, and they are harnessed anyway. But, like, it's straight-up Spider-Man. Like, it's fake walls. It's all stuff put together. But these people are, like, flying up these walls. It was a lot of fun to watch.
It's American Warrior.
And apparently it's new in the Olympics also. But, yeah. So what about you two? What are some of your favorite summer Olympics?
Basketball,
it's like, I'm old. After the original Dream Team, it never seemed worthwhile anymore.
That's why you got to keep watching. You got to wait for the next one, you know?
Most of them were at the end of their career. Like, I don't know if Larry Bird could even walk when he was on the Dream Team, but still. I'm not a big basketball fan anymore, so the players don't mean as much to me as they did back then. So, like, but of course, it's, if you want to watch your team dominate, you go and you watch U.S. basketball.
But they don't, like, the world is so good now that it's like, it's not as dominant. Oh, that's right.
They didn't spread against someone, and then everyone was giving them crap about it.
South Sudan. But that, like, that's the, I think that we're living in the ripple effect of the Dream Team, because you had Michael Jordan, who was the most recognizable athlete on the planet at that point, but then you also had Bird and Magic and Barkley and Chris Mullin. Don't forget Chris Mullin. Christian Laettner. You know, no, you had all of these, like, incredible players, and they just dominated, and the world was like, oh, basketball is interesting and can be, you know, you can play at this level. And all of a sudden you saw offshoots, and all of a sudden, like, you had like Croatia had good teams and
well, and two, some of the best NBA players are not now, American, you know, like this past NBA draft, there were so many foreign guys taken. So I think that definitely plays a lot into it as well. I don't know, I guess a non-boring answer, maybe swimming. Some of the track and field stuff's cool, but I really unfortunately don't find myself watching the Olympics as much because I'm so consumed with fantasy football at this point in time.
See, we just re-upped live. So I don't live TV outside of football season because it's expensive and whatever. But we just re-upped like 3 weeks early to get the Olympics before football season comes in. And like I'm a junkie. I'll watch whatever. Like I love the Winter Olympics because I love to like I'll flip on like curling or you know things so that you're like watch, you're never gonna or like biathlon, which is like Norwegian drive by. You know, you're on skis and then you're like, but the two sports in the Summer Olympics that like are out there, but like I will absolutely watch if they come on. Is the canoe slalom. So they will build a river. That. Yeah, so they'll build a river and you've got guys in canoes going all over the place. And I will watch that because it's fascinating and like fast paced, fun. And then handball. Like handball is like this weird, unholy amalgam of soccer and basketball at the same time, and you can like jump and like inside the area where you're not allowed to go. And so that's like, those are the two sports that you'll catch me watching them. I'll be up at like 4:30 in the morning before work watching handball, you know?
Now I have to watch handball because I've never seen anyone play handball before. And that sounds,
it's amazing. It's so much fun.
Yeah. Like gymnastics is like my easy and truest answer because like they're at the point, like I love, like they show videos of like Olympics in the 80s and what people did to get like perfect tens. And like, you would get a zero if you did that today.
Yeah.
Like people aren't human anymore. And like, I love the uneven bars cause it looks like they defy physics. Like they're going in the wrong direction sometimes. Like I don't understand it. And it's just so amazing to watch what people can do. And I pull a hamstring watching them do it.
Have you watched, it's on Netflix right
now, Simone Biles
documentary? Yep. So good.
So good. It's just watched it last night with my wife.
Oh.
Herm says, I got a Romanian buddy who moved here after not qualifying for the Olympic handball team. It's a big deal, evidently. Oh, wow. Shit. So he didn't make it, so we had to leave. That's rough.
Come to America, make the American handball team. Let's go.
There you go.
Get on there. All right. So we have a couple more questions, so let's move on. At F Tommy B., if you could make an NCAA 25 type game about anything, what would you choose and why? See, I'm gonna have a good answer for this because my problem is I have one hobby and it's fantasy football, and that's not a very good video game.
Yeah, I haven't played like I feel bad, Tommy. I feel like I'm doing you a disservice, but like I haven't played video games for a really like Tecmo Super Bowl. Baseball Stars, like those were the last game. Yeah, like those were the last games that I really played. Like
would a wild guess. It's before you were born, Brian.
I've got a Tecmo Bowl machine right there next in my office. I got all the old stuff on there.
But like, I wish they. So Herms, EA Sports hasn't made MVP baseball since 2005. They actually made a college baseball that year too, which is fantastic because you can make the University of Maine at Farmington, and here we are. But I would like to like reboot. They used to have a game on Nintendo called Base Wars, which wasn't really well done, but the concept was really good. It was robots playing the sports. And I think you could do so much. You could do like robo sports and do create a team and online play and a whole bunch of mods and ads and be able to like create leagues. I think that would be fun. But I haven't been sucked into the hype of NCAA football. I'm sorry. I don't watch college football until I well, and it's fine. Like I'm not like no. There's absolutely nothing wrong.
Oh
with
yeah,
it.
No.
I'm sure. I'm beyond happy that everybody's excited about it. It's great. I was one of those guys who had to sign the form that said the NCAA could use my name, image, and likeness for whatever they wanted, and I didn't get anything. So like the fact that guys are getting paid for that and people are excited about it and people are playing it, like I am absolutely on board. It just doesn't like that doesn't pop for me.
Yeah, I usually wait to buy Madden until Black Friday when I can get it half off. I was going to do the same with this, and oh my God, I fell into the hype. I was so disappointed. And my favorite mode, mascot mode, is not even freaking on it. I loved, as a kid, playing as the Oregon Ducks playing against Alabama Elephants. Like, that was so fucking cool. Freaking cool.
I'm not going back. Keep talking. So wait, so you literally played as the mascots? Like your
Yeah, the mascot for the college Ducks. Were the players. Because, like, you know, we didn't have names on the back, so, like...
Right.
The players didn't matter, but yeah, they just put in the so I like if it. You were playing as Ohio State, you had the cowboy running out there with the ball, and it was so
like,
cool,
like NBA Jam if you had the right code. Yeah.
And it's funny, like
an addition.
Frank said handball video game with power ups would be sweet. There was a volleyball game on Nintendo that I can't remember.
No,
the name
it was
of it.
It was dodgeball.
That also
it was Super Dodgeball was
Super
amazing.
Dodgeball, yeah.
Super
no,
Dodgeball.
That was also a very good game, but no, there was also a volleyball game. Holy crap, you're right. I'm thinking about the dodgeball game.
Yeah, Super
Why
Dodgeball.
Why are you
amazing.
Me, Zach? Why are you get out of my head? Okay, let's move on. At Jesse Schott says, what kind of team build would you like to try that you haven't done yet? Assuming that I haven't been playing for far too long that I haven't tried at all, but What's a build that you don't normally do that you are interested in trying?
I like Tom Burrow's idea of the arms race, like the multiple, like five, try to get the top five quarterbacks and see if you can just bully your league into submission. I really think that is an interesting strategy and so far out of what I normally do.
Oh, yeah, none of your strategies usually evolve around trading.
No, I'm like XQB. If a guy used to play quarterback, maybe I'll roster him. But
Antoine Randall L., that's fine. Let's go. What about you, Brian? Is there anything that you do you have? Okay, well, let's start this with a question, like taking a step back. What's your usual build? How do you like to build your dynasty teams?
So I kind of touched on it, like been doing Dynasty for about 4 years now, and that's the kind of cool thing. As I've learned more and more, it's evolved. I will say I took a running back in the second round. The league I was in that first draft overall, all of a sudden guys are trading for the first round pick, and I kind of did the math of like how it worked. I'm like, okay, it seems like that's a good strategy to trade up. Traded up to get a second round pick, took a running back there. He tore his ACL that season. So it's been a lot of learning curve. Zach was kind of talking about the whole wide receivers potential roster clog. So I've started a new, I think I'm in eight dynasty leagues, but I've started two new ones every single season because there's players that I knew their value was going to go up, but I couldn't trade for them at the price that I wanted in my active league. So this most recent one, I actually went with heavy wide receiver in the beginning, and then I stopped. I think right now I'm starting four wide receivers, but I've only got two on my bench. I just made sure that I wasn't grabbing all of these like round 15 and back wide receivers because ultimately they're just going to clog me up. Let me load up with running backs and quarterbacks. And as these depth charts evolve, I'll figure out which ones are worthwhile. And then the other ones I know I can drop and move on. Maybe grab a wide receiver that's sitting there and may give me something, but at least I have roster spots because a lot of those leagues I started with early on, I've got like 12 wide receivers. Nobody's willing to pay for them. I'm not ready to drop them. You know, it just kind of it puts you in a weird situation. So I think kind of going elite wide receiver has been my new strategy, I guess. Long answer.
No, not a long answer at all. I could talk for much longer than that and get off topic 15 times.
Well, this isn't my show. I don't want to be selfish there.
You're the guest. You're supposed to be the one that talks about more. The problem is I started already 2 years ago. I started somewhat caring about running backs. Like usually I won't have a running back on my roster until the season starts. And then it's someone I could trade a second for. It's the Joe Mixons of the world. It's the, at this point, Aaron Joneses and Josh Jacobses of the world. Derrick Henry. Exactly. before last season, I traded for a lot of Christian McCaffrey. Like, I have Christian McCaffrey on, like, four teams, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for me, that's a lot. I literally – this is literally the first time I've owned Christian McCaffrey during a season. I always say this is the first time I owned Christian McCaffrey, but Trader Joe, our buddy, loves to point out that I traded for him once in the non-point scoring season in TA3, like, 7 years ago. I had him for, like, 3 weeks, and he was gone. But also, like, drafting – running backs in the end of the first round, if it's worthwhile for them to be there. Like, I'm not talking about those like Trey Sermons and Keyshawn Vaughns that we would push up to the end of the first just because we felt like we needed a running back. But like, you know, this year, Brooks pushed his way to a little earlier in the first. But at the time when how early we did our rookie drafts, Brooks was at the end of the first, Trey Benson was at the beginning of the second. The year before, I got a lot of Devon Achane at that 110, 111 area. And I used to not be willing to do that. But it seems like when a player deserves to be there, it makes sense to grab them there as opposed to being like, I like wide receivers and just grabbing the wide receiver that's the sexy name at the time. So like that really for me is more along the lines of, you know, me doing something I don't normally do. The problem for this question is I started it 2 years ago, or I guess like a full season ago. As opposed to doing it, you know, what would I try and do now?
Yeah.
Favorite summer Olympic sport, beach, men's or women's volleyball, because I played it all my life. Oh, that's cool. I mean, I can't do that. It's funny. Volleyball is one of those things like to me, like, I don't know if you guys were ever pro wrestling fans, or even if you're not, the thing is you watch these guys in the ring and they bounce off the ropes and it looks so easy and it looks like those ropes are so bendy. I don't know if either of you ever stepped in an actual wrestling ring. Those things are like tightened coils. I was like 14 and tried to bounce off of it and I fell down. I might as well have hit a wall. Volleyball is almost the same to me. Like, you watch these people effortlessly hit this ball like 100 yards at breakneck speeds, and it's like, that would break my hand if I tried to do that.
That's literally every professional sport. Like, and you sit there and you watch and you're like, oh, I could do that. And like, no, you can't.
Yeah, I was 6'5", so I always thought I should have been good at volleyball, but I wasn't. I was smart, though. My first semester in college, I went to all the girls' volleyball games because I'm like, all right, where am I going to find girls my height? The volleyball team. So, you know, that's like, I'll be the tall guy that hangs out.
Yeah, it's like they tell you to play basketball because you're tall, but it turns out you're not very good, so you just stand under the net with your hands in the air. That's what you do with volleyball. You just stand in front of the net with your hands in the air.
Yeah, I was tall my whole life, so I always played center in basketball. And then as I got older and stopped growing, 6'5", is, you know, now like a guard in some senses. Yeah. And I didn't have those skills because I never got to learn to do that because I was the rebound, put it back up.
Herm says the best summer sport in the Olympics is skateboarding because shredding is super sick and very rad.
They did bring that in there. That's right.
Since we're talking about old video games forever, there was a game called California Games on Nintendo where not only was there surfing and skateboarding, but there was hacky sacking, which I was terrible at. But I just wanted to bring up.
I thought for sure you were going skate or die. Skate or die.
Another game I was terrible at. So, but that was a very good game, but I was so bad at it. At King Showtime 44, basketball is my favorite Olympic sport. What's your takeaway from camp news so far? Also, who does Joe Burrow most resemble currently? We talked about all of this already. Olympic basketball, our takeaways from a lot of the camp news was a lot of the news, and we made fun of enough about Joe Burrow. But has anything dawned on anyone in the past hour and 20 minutes?
Can I go one quick camp news thing? Please. We don't know enough yet, but this is the start of drumbeat season. So, like, listen, but don't act yet. We're not there yet.
We've had a couple of Best Shape of His Life articles, which always make me happy. I love the Best Shape of His Life news stories. That makes it's just like, good for you, man.
I'm in the best shape of this year. Not of my life, though.
No. Well, you also.
Leonard Fournette. It's the Leonard Fournette line. Yeah. He's in the best shape of his life.
Best shape of his life. What about anything else to add, Brian?
Nah.
Nah. All right.
Nah.
So let's get on to last question @MK_Schoner. What do you guys think of trading
wow, Jay Cooks. I'm like, what the hell? Who's Jay Cooks? Who's Jay Cooks?
James.
James Cooks.
Captain.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. Good, Russ. Oh, man, it's so bad time. What do you guys think of trading James Cooks and the 305 to get the 107? In general, what are your thoughts on Cooks' value? Well, first of all, you got to tell us what kind of league this is. Regardless, I have always found it almost impossible to be excited about James Cook. To me, he was one of those guys, he was one of those guys who was elevated to the end of the first of his rookie class because it felt like there needed to be a running back there. You know, Zach is one of the reasons it's impossible for me to be excited about the running back in Buffalo, because as he always says, and since he's here, I'm still going to say it for him. The number one running back in Buffalo wears the number 17. And yeah, as he gets older, it'll probably be less and less. And James, like, Cooks has looked good at times, but it's never been consistent. And they've always tried to bring in more running backs. So especially if we're talking super flex, where you're at the point of maybe getting Drake May, maybe getting McCarthy, but also we hit that players I love area of Jonathan Brooks, Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas Jr. There's a chance that Dungey or Bowers falls if it's not a super tight end premium.
Yeah,
you know, Bowers might fall, so I would much rather have any of those guys I just listed over Cooks.
Yeah,
You could trade down and get Jonathan Brooks. Yeah, a couple picks later.
Yeah, you see, it is Cook, and that's what's been throwing me off.
It's just a singular Cook.
I had to look at that up too. I was like, it's Dalvin Cook. It's Dalvin Cook's brother, right?
Which was awesome because in RIP, our league that used to draft before the NFL draft, the league didn't quit. They just voted to stop that. I got James Cook in the fourth before the NFL draft. And I literally only did it because I'm like, points for Bloodlines League. Let's go. And yeah, of course, he didn't really do anything great.
I mean, he was pretty good this past year.
He was good, yeah, but also well since I've traded him away. I don't want to say any first. Like, most of us have done our rookie drafts already, but I mean, since he's talking about specific picks in a super flex, I don't want to say any first, but it's pretty close to any first.
I mean, it in a super flex, it literally is any first for me. Like, you would want Neighbors over him. You would want Bowers over him. You would want Worthy, Odunze, May, McCarthy, Thomas, Brooks, Benson, McConkey. Like, so that's you're at 13.
Yeah, Benson and McConkey are the two that really that's what I think of in that 12 spot. Is do I jump a little on Benson because I like him and because I like the situation? McConkey's fine, but he's nothing to be excited about either. So in which case, why don't I just take the running back who I know will score pretty well? So literally, like, not saying any first is literally maybe the 112.
Yeah, but this is also how I tend to play running backs is give me 2 years.
Yeah.
And then if I can get a first, generally I try to get like a first plus. But if I can get a first, I'll do that. I'll re-rack it. And if it's somebody that other people value higher than I do, then I'm going to get a first plus and be very happy about it.
Yeah, and also I just feel the need to point out how Ron Burgundy I just was, and I just saw Cooks up there, kept reading it, and I started to convince myself that it was right. Ugh. On that note, that is the end of our show sheet, so that is absolutely going to be the end of our show. Thank you so much, Brian, for coming on. I had a blast. I hope you did as well. Before we head out, why don't you remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they could find what you do.
Brian Hartman, all over the fantasy space, trying to have fun and give out a little bit of advice as well. @too_much_Brian's where you can find me on Twitter. I'm on YouTube under the Fantasy Football Advice Network, where we're, you know, like I said, I've got a couple shows over there. And then, of course, come check out the Fantasy Football Advice Network. It's Twitter without the drama, or not yet anyway. Wait till the season gets hit. But yeah, social media platform just drops. We're having a lot of fun getting that rocking and rolling. But yeah, guys, thanks for having me on again. This was a blast.
And yes, our stuff, patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. Hang out with us while we record. You see, you know, I can't think of things to say, so I talk about what the people in the chat are saying. Also, we have our awesome Discord chat, the Cool Kids Club. I'm still so used to saying GroupMe. It's been like a year, and I still go to say GroupMe. Our awesome Discord chat, the Cool Kids Club. It's just a rocking good time. I should probably actually make more things for Patreon, but I love all of you anyway. And other than that, fantasycares.org, everybody. I know Fishbowl drafts are pretty much over, but that doesn't mean it's time to stop giving, please, if you can. And if you can't, just spread the word even more. Fantasycares.org/stickers. Join the Sticker of the Month Club. This is my favorite. And hey, if you are on Patreon, you could see me holding my water cup up with all of the stickers I've gotten so far.
Those are pretty dope.
And this month is three awesome stickers. It's a glow-in-the-dark DreamWorks sticker. I don't lose my water cup. I have a black water cup, and so like when the lights are off, I'm like throwing my arms out randomly to hope I slap against it, but don't knock it off my nightstands. Now I see it because this thing shines in the dark. It's wonderful. I love it. But again, this is an audio platform, and I'm trying to show you guys stickers. So really, on that note, I'm going to say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, Russ.
Later. Thank you for listening to the Great Attic Pod, a proud member in the Dynasty Attic Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FF Attic. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Great Attic Podcast. Poopy Pants. That is the best. See ya.